I grew up in a haunted house. You don't have to believe me, but I grew up in a haunted house. It was once my great-grandmother's house. While I have many stories to tell, and I will, this is one that she told. The house is in a small mill town on the Ohio River, about 15 miles above Pittsburgh. Once a thriving town, it had been long in a slow state of decay. Once the town had more mills, bars, and churches than any other town in America, they like to say. Great-grandma went to church. Great-grandpa Jake went to the bars, as many bars as he could, every night. On his way home from the pipe mill, every night after the 3 to 11 shift, he'd stop in every bar that he could. Every night, Jake would not make it home until very late. Great-grandma gave up waiting for him. Each night, after the children were put to bed, she went too. And then, one night, when Great-grandma's up in bed, a little after 11 o'clock, the front door opened, and the front door closed. And Great-grandma yelled out, "Jake, is that you?" But nobody answered her. Instead, she heard someone start to come up the stairs. A footstep onto the lower landing, footsteps up the stairs, and the footsteps stopped on the upper landing. And Great-grandma called out again, "Jake, is that you?" No answer. Then someone climbed the last set of stairs to the upper hallway and stopped. And she called out, "Jake, is that you?" No answer. Now the footsteps came down the hall. They stopped outside of her door. She whispered, "Jake, is that you?" Again, no answer. Now, Great-grandma's fear was replaced with anger, thinking her husband was playing a trick on her, and she shouted, "God damn it, Jake! This isn't funny anymore!" But the house stood very still, very quiet, and the bedroom door slowly swung open, but nobody was there. The next morning, still disturbed by what happened last night, Great-grandma answered the ringing phone. The caller extended his condolences. "I am so sorry to have to tell you this, but your brother John passed away last night." She asked what time? A little after 11 o'clock. Welcome back to Monsters Among Us. Thank you for tuning in. I am so happy that you are here. If you are new, I am Kate Moser, and each week we explore the question, are monsters real? Today's monster, crisis apparitions. Are we visited by the spiritual presences of our loved ones at the moment of their traumatic and unexpected deaths? Or is this some figment of our imaginations trying to piece together the emotions we feel after such a terrible loss? Get comfy, because here we go. The story you heard at the beginning of this episode is a true one. I really did grow up in a haunted house. A house which I believe to contain a portal to the spirit realm and home to loving spirits like my great-grandma, but it's also home to a demon which still visits me in my nightmares, and I really truly believe it's trying to summon me back to that house so that it can attach itself to me. We might have to do a full episode on all of the experiences my family had in that house. The Jake, is that you story is one that my father told me and his grandmother told him. As a child, it scared the living shit out of me. Every creaking floorboard meant a ghost was one step closer to me. As an adult, it gets me curious about the idea that at the moment of death or near death, do we really have a chance to say goodbye, especially if our death's a tragic and unexpected one? I found the following story in a CNN article by John Blake called "Do Loved Ones Bid Farewell Beyond the Grave?" Nina DeSanto was about to close her New Jersey hair salon one winter's night when she saw him standing outside the shop's glass front door. It was Michael. He was a soft-spoken customer who'd been going through a brutal patch in his life. His wife had divorced him after having an affair with his stepbrother, and he lost custody of his boy and girl in the ensuing battle. He was emotionally shattered, but DeSanto had tried to help. She'd listen to his problems, give him pep talks, take him out for drinks. When DeSanto opened the door that Saturday night, Michael was smiling. "Nina, I can't stay long," he said, pausing in the doorway. "I just wanted to stop by and say thank you for everything." They chatted a bit more before Michael left and DeSanto went home. On Sunday, she received a strange call from a salon employee. Michael's body had been found the previous morning, at least 9 hours before she had talked to him at her shop. He had committed suicide. If Michael was dead, who or what did she talk to that night? "It was very bizarre," she said in the 2001 encounter. "I went through a period of disbelief. How can you tell someone that you saw this man, solid as ever, walk in and talk to you, but he's dead?" In the paranormal realm, a crisis apparition is believed to be the telepathic sending of energy to the loved one at the moment of death or traumatic event. It's not necessarily their spirit visiting you, as these apparitions are usually not a reoccurring phenomenon. Being a scientist, I always teach my students that you have to have credible evidence to back up any claim that you make. You can't have an opinion without data to support it. But when dealing with the paranormal, how can you have data to support? Well, I did some digging and found several peer-reviewed journal articles dealing with crisis apparitions. Earl Lender Haraldson published a study in the Journal of Psychology in the 1980s looking at the idea of vericidal apparitions or visits at the time of death. In his study, he surveyed 337 Icelandic people in regards to their experiences. The aim of the study was to answer the questions: who are the deceased? Do they share specific characteristics? Do we find vericidal apparitions? How strong is the evidence for collectively observed apparitions? Participants were randomly selected, and 86 questions ranging from the circumstances of the deaths to details of the encounters. With all responses, accuracy checks were made with the University of Iceland, which has kept a century's worth of really detailed data on the Icelandic population, which includes records of their births and specific information about their deaths. 69% of the experiences had visual representation, much like Nina DeSanto, and 28% of the experiences were auditory, like my great-grandma. The article published contains several interesting accounts. "I was a member of the parliament for 18 years, and during that time, I was in contact with many men who later became good acquaintances of mine. One of them was Carl Christiansen. We were friends and kept in touch and on and off when we were retired. One winter's day, I went out to the stable, as I usually did for lunch. When I had been shoveling for a while, I suddenly felt Carl standing in front of me in one of the stalls in the stable, and he said something rather particular. 'You were lucky. You did fine.' And that was all. Then he disappeared. That evening, his death was announced on the radio. While pondering about the incident and trying to figure it out, I learned that he had suffered a heart attack and had been brought to Rijkschef City Hospital, where he died. I had been admitted to that hospital a year earlier after suffering a similar attack. I luckily recuperated and could go home, whereas he died. In that context, I understood his words, 'You were lucky. You had good luck.'" Another read: "It was just after graduation in 1939. I was coming home from a dance. I hadn't tasted a drop of alcohol. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning in full light, as it was the middle of summer. I was walking over a bare hill on my way home from town. Then there comes a woman towards me, kind of stooping with a shawl over her head. And I didn't pay any attention to her, but as she passes me, I say good morning or something like that. She didn't say anything. Then I noticed that she had changed her course and follows a little bit behind me. I got slightly uneasy about this and found it odd. When I stopped, she stopped also. I started saying my prayers in my mind to calm myself. When I came home, she disappeared. I lived in a house on a compound of a psychiatric hospital where my father worked. I go up to my room. My brother, Agner, wakes up and says, half asleep, "What is this old woman doing here? Why is this old woman with you?" And I tell him not to speak such nonsense, but to continue sleeping, although I knew what he meant. I did not see the woman at the time, but my brother appeared to see her when he woke up. I go out to get me some coffee. When I return to my room, Agner sits up again and says, "Why has this woman come back?" And I tell him not to act like that, that there's no woman in here, and that he is confused and should go back to sleep. At lunch the following day, I say to my brother, "What nonsense was this last night? You thought you saw a woman in our bedroom?" "Yes," he said. "I felt as though an old woman came with you into the room." Then our father became attentive and said to me, "Did you see something last night?" I told him that I had seen this woman. "That is strange," he said. "Around 3 o'clock this morning, old Vigga died." What I had seen fit her description perfectly. The study concluded, in short, persons suffering a violent death feature predominantly in cases of apparitions of the dead and in cases of a reincarnation type, as well as mediumship, both direct communications and drop-ins. The cases tend to have an invasive character in that the deceased persons are frequently unknown to those who experience them and thus seem to assume an active role in their appearance. All of these findings tend, in my view, to support the survival hypothesis. Basically, the researchers stated that their data can't rule out the possibility that these experiences are paranormal in nature and they can't just be hallucinations. I was also able to find a dissertation by Jenny Strathorn entitled "A Systemic Review of Research on After-Death Communication." In this dissertation, Strathorn examines multiple sources of after-death communication and found that nearly 35% of Americans will experience some sort of after-death communication in their lifetime, with 85% of these experiences happening within a year of their loved one's death. So, does this help us answer the question, are we actually being visited by our loved ones, or is this just our mind's coping mechanism? I think we might have to open our minds to it being a mixture of the two. It's understandable that we might see, feel, and smell things that remind us of our bereaved while we cope with our loss, but that really doesn't explain seeing them just before you know they have passed. It does not explain the thousands of stories told about having a conversation with someone only to find out that they were already dead. If you have any experiences of your own, I'd love to hear them. Head over to Instagram, The Monsters Among Us Podcast, follow and send me a DM. I would really like to start featuring listener stories. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Tune back in next week for a true crime monster. Stay safe, make good choices, and say no to late night bar visits.